Chapter 1. The Metacognitive Approach. What can we do about our thoughts? Anyone who works with the psyche identifies issues and tries to find a reason for them so that they have a starting point from which to treat them. Let me give you three simplified examples. A medical physician will say that depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain. Therefore, this condition should be treated by using chemistry. The cognitive therapist will say that depression is rooted in the undesirable beliefs one has. The therapist will work with restructuring these beliefs from being undesirable to more desirable in order to cure the depression or to reduce the symptoms of depression. And what then characterizes the metacognitive approach? The metacognitive therapist will say that the psychological inability to thrive, particularly in the case of anxiety and depression, develops due to the excessive attention given to some specific cognitive processes. These cognitive processes can be worrying about the future, ruminating about the past, or about something you would like to understand. Why me? How could this happen to me? Why is the world like this? This excessive attention to worrying and ruminating is called CAS. Wells, 2009, pages 11 to 15. CAS is an abbreviation for Cognitive Attentional Syndrome. CAS is a core element in metacognitive therapy, and therefore appears often throughout this book. The hypothesis here is that if you minimize the excessive attention on worrying and ruminating, in other words, either fully remove CAS or markedly reduce it, you will be able to begin to think constructively and creatively, and thereby overcome depression, anxiety, and psychological distress in general. The problem is that certain thinking processes take up all too much space in your life. For example, worrying about the future, or ruminating about the past, or about actual situations. What are metacognitions? Metacognitions are the thoughts that make up your thinking and other cognitive processes, for example, your memory, concentration, and awareness. That is, how you think, and not what you think. Metacognitions are therefore realizations about realizations. They are our beliefs about how our thoughts and feelings function, and what these mean for us. We all have some presumptions about how thoughts and feelings function, or how great a significance certain thoughts or feelings should have. Metacognitions can play a crucial role in our psychological ability or inability to thrive. They can, for example, be part of maintaining or intensifying CAS, which, according to this method, is the primary reason underlying many forms of psychological distress. It is precisely these overriding beliefs that metacognitive therapy is concerned with to a large degree. Wells, 2009. A participant of a course once suggested the following definition of metacognitions: the thoughts about thoughts. And this is precisely what metacognitions are about. Influence on our own thoughts. Within the metacognitive approach, it is not uncommon for the therapist to use extreme examples to show what metacognitive therapy is all about. So try to imagine for the moment that you are objectively stupid, ugly, and unlovable, and that all of the people in the world would agree 100% that this is true. My question to you would be, how big of a problem would it be for you to be stupid, ugly, and unlovable if you never thought about it? The answer is that it would not be a problem at all, because it is not about whether what you think is true or false. On the contrary, it is about how much you are in contact with certain thoughts, regardless of whether they are right or wrong. Because even if you have a strong belief about something in particular, if you are only in touch with it for 5 minutes every other day, this belief does not play a very large role for you. The rest of the time, it is not in your active consciousness at all. Because how large a problem can something be if you do not think about it? How can a forgotten thought be problematic for you? In cognitive behavioral therapy, it is said that thoughts have a significance and that thoughts can be restructured from being unsuitable thoughts to suitable thoughts. The cognitive therapist works with reality checks, among other things, to try to find evidence that a thought is true or untrue. In other words, to find out whether you really are as stupid, ugly, and unlovable that you believe yourself to be. By contrast, metacognitive therapy does not concern itself with whether a thought is true or false, but with what we do with our thoughts. And the metacognitive therapist keeps an eye on whether the client has an excessive focus on specific thoughts that influence the person, which come to control him or her. Many clients are used to forms of therapy where the dialogue between client and therapist fills a lot of time. And even, for example, where the events from the past or even the content of their worrying and rumination are focused upon. It is not like this with metacognitive therapy. Sometimes I get inquiries from people who call and ask how long a session lasts. In their eyes, it is meaningful whether a session lasts 45, 50 or 55 minutes. But the number of minutes is not crucial because it is not time that the therapist is selling. The therapy sessions are based on exercises more than dialogue, and often clients are tired after 45 minutes. It is therefore not a method that can withstand sessions of 60 minutes. The use of the metacognitive method in this book. The metacognitive method was developed by psychologist and professor Adrian Wells. Through his observations and research studies, Wells found that people with disorders such as generalized anxiety disorder, social anxiety, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, OCD, obsessive-compulsive thoughts and actions, and depression achieved faster results when focusing on how a client dealt with their thoughts instead of focusing on the content of the thoughts themselves. In other words, when they were focused on how they coped with their thoughts. Wells, 1997 and 2009. When it is about conditions that are characterized by a client's excessive focus on some certain thought processes, such as worrying and rumination, the metacognitive method is thought to be optimal and can be used alone. Other times, this method cannot be used alone. This can be the case with more serious disorders, such as, for example, personality disorders. In these cases, there will be other conditions to consider. But a part of the metacognitive approach can often be used. Precisely, just like with penicillin, which certainly does not help with every condition, but with many. Throughout this book, I work according to Adrian Wells' approach and his definitions, which are used within the metacognitive approach. The exercises in this book are based on the exercises that are normally used within the metacognitive method, Wells, 1997 and 2009, supplemented by my own models. In my therapeutic practice, I work by showing and illustrating through examples how my clients relate to their own thoughts and how these affect their well-being rather than trying to explain them. The same principle applies to this book, where you will be presented with the psychological concepts and exercises through several different cases. Common to most of the cases in this book is that the metacognitive approach is the most optimal for the client and therefore can be used alone. The purpose of this book is not to provide a verbatim description of the metacognitive approach, but rather to focus on how this method is applied in my clinical practice. And practice is precisely the key word because I sometimes adjust this method based on the clinical experience that I have with my clients. Modifications can therefore happen underway in relation to Adrian Wells' theory. One very concrete example is the way in which I use the concept CAS. As a starting point, CAS is a disorder you can have. But in my approach, CAS also figures as a space and type of prison, that is, a box you can find yourself in. Negative and positive metacognitions. Within metacognitive therapy, the therapist looks at so-called negative and positive metacognitions. In other words, the overall beliefs about one's own thought processes. Wells, 2009, pages 15 to 16. These terms can be misleading because they do not mean that some types of metacognitions are negative and some are positive. These terms simply refer to the different functions that metacognitions have. There are two types of negative metacognitions. Type A: I cannot control my thoughts. My thoughts control me. Type B: my thoughts and emotional states are damaging or dangerous. Most clients who I meet in my clinical practice do not believe that they have any influence on their thought processes, and they experience that their thoughts dominate everything. A number of them also fear that their negative thoughts and emotional states can be directly damaging or dangerous. Among other things, one of my clients was tormented by anxiety attacks, and she was afraid that her many negative thoughts would end up damaging her brain and the rest of her body. This is just one example of metacognitions that must be challenged through therapy. Positive metacognitions refer to some other types of beliefs about how our worrying and ruminating will help us to find solutions or answers to our problems, understand past or present actions, or that we, through our worrying, can prepare ourselves for future situations. These are beliefs such as, if only I worry enough, I can prevent what I'm worried about from happening because I'll be prepared. Negative and positive metacognitions maintain CAS, that is, the excessive attention on specific unsuitable thought processes, such as worrying and ruminating. This means that our metacognitions allow us to continue to be in CAS. Negative metacognitions can tell us that we cannot control our thought processes, and therefore we cannot stop our worrying and ruminating, while positive metacognitions can contribute to emphasizing the importance of giving certain thoughts excessive attention. Both types make us continue to ruminate and worry. Wells, 2009. Thoughts and thought processes. In the first session, I always talk to my clients about what they can control and what they cannot control. Although they cannot control the fact that they have thoughts, they can influence what they do with their thoughts. This is where the metacognitive approach is unique, because you can look at the experience of control, not at the content of your thoughts, but at your thought processes and how you relate to these thoughts. It does not make sense to send a client home with different exercises that she should practice at home if she does not think that she has any control over her thought processes. The difference between thought processes and thoughts is crucial, because we will always have thoughts. We cannot simply remove them, and it certainly is not the case that we should do so. Some of my clients wish to never have certain thoughts and feelings, but this battle is lost beforehand. We cannot make a list of over 100 thoughts that we never ever want to have again, and then expect that they will never return. We can never become empty of thought. Instead, it is obvious to think about what we can do with our thoughts when they pop up. How can we best cope with them so that they are not running our lives, but rather we are? Just by understanding that we cannot repress our thoughts and get a beneficial result by doing so, we have removed a large pressure from ourselves. Instead of going into our thoughts all too often to try to analyze and understand them, we can choose another way, which is useful for everyone. Regardless of whether you generally feel healthy and sound, or whether you are weighed down by anxiety and depression. Imagine that your telephone rings. How big of an influence do you have on your telephone ringing? None. But you can influence what you do with the call. You can choose to answer it. You can choose to turn off the volume. You can choose to not take the call and turn off the telephone or throw it away from you. This example functions in the same way in relation to your thoughts and feelings. You have no influence on what pops up in your thoughts and feelings. Thoughts are electrochemical impulses in our brains, and these we cannot control. But you do have an influence on what you do with your thoughts when they show up. This exercise is inspired by Esprian et al., 2016, page 98. We do not have to deal with everything. Life contains problems, large as well as small, and we must never delude ourselves that we can go through existence without getting a few blows along the way, sometimes serious blows. Fortunately, far from all people develop anxiety and depression because they think negative thoughts. It is not the purpose of our lives that we should always feel and relate to every little thing that arises in our heads. Most of us can well understand and accept that we cannot prevent thoughts from arising. But at other times, life can be so painful that it is right to seek professional help. And it is this help that I provide through my daily practice as a psychologist. Metacognitive therapy is my primary tool, and it is this approach, metacognitive therapy, free yourself from imprisoning thoughts, is all about. This book cannot replace therapy, but it can be a supplement to a course of therapy, and it can introduce you to what the metacognitive method is all about. Thoughts like running sushi. A classic metacognitive example. We ourselves choose how great of an importance we will give to our thoughts. Many people will object. This is not something we can decide for ourselves. But let us try to imagine the following scenario. You have gone out to eat running sushi. The various small plates pass you by on the conveyor belt, and you choose which dishes you want to taste, taking the plates over to your table. Will you choose the plates of sushi you know you do not like? What if you taste a new dish and you find out that you do not like it either? Will you then take another plate of the same dish when it passes by on the conveyor belt again? And will you keep choosing sushi you do not like, or that even makes you feel nauseated, for 10, 20, 50 or 100 times? No. Why then choose to use a lot of time on thoughts that give the same negative responses? All thoughts come and go, also the unwanted ones, just like all the pieces of sushi you do not like that continue to pass you by on the conveyor belt. We must learn not to use more time than is necessary on the thoughts that make us unwell. We cannot control whether we get a particular thought any more than we can control what the sushi chef chooses to place on the conveyor belt. But we can choose whether to take the plate or let it pass by. Freely adapted from Harris, 2011. Thoughts don't matter, but your response to them does. Adrian Wells, Metacognitive Therapy for Anxiety and Depression, page 1.